All right. Let's talk to a good sport right now. Let's go to Central Ohio. Join one of our regulars here. I'm sure I'm making his mouth water with all those wonderful products. Dorsey Hager, who's Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Central Ohio Building Trades, ColumbusConstruction.org. Dorsey Hager, how we doing, my brother?
Doing great. Sounded like all the foods were great picnic and or baseball game foods. So you can have them around the house, poolside, off the grill, or have them at a local sporting event. But all sounded good. You're right. You were making my mouth water with that intro.
Yeah, I guess I should mention some of those that are not in favor of alcoholic drinks. Pepsi, A&W Root Beer, Canada Dry, Ocean Spray, Cranberry Juice, just to name a few. Yeah, there's so many out there, and it's so important we get that message out. Okay, got a couple of things to talk about on the show today. Let's start off with the Ohio AFL-CIO Legislative Convention. I had a good conversation with Tim Berga on this, and I know what the topic is, and that's changing our Constitution, which hasn't been done since, 1912? I'd like to get your point of view. Dorsey, you were in the middle of it all. Let's hear your take on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so obviously folks reached out to me and because of proximity to the state house and also my beliefs in keeping, you know, the 50% plus one is the status quo for democracy here in central in the state of Ohio. They asked me to come down and give testimony both at the state house and at the Senate when it came to changing the Constitution to the 60% threshold. Obviously, politically, this is the reason why they're behind this is because they're trying to stop what happened to Kansas. You know, reproductive rights bill will be on the ballot in November. The folks out there gaining signatures have not only got signatures and they've got capital behind them, but they've also gained momentum. You know, there's a lot of folks that obviously do not want the state or the government stepping in on rights that they make for themselves or their families when it comes to these reproductive issues. So the House and Senate have kind of tried to preemptively stop that from getting on the ballot by raising a 60% constitutional amendment and also increasing signatures throughout the different counties and stuff. There's a lot of other amendments and issues to it, but somebody might say, well, why would somebody from labor get involved in this? Or why would the Columbus Building Trades come out against this as well as the, you know, United Association, the IBW, the Ohio State Building Trades, and I'm sure many, many other building trades organizations. Well, it's very simple. It's about fairness and it's about democracy. Like I said, you know, we're based on 50% majority rules, 50% plus one. But also, it's like I said at the state building trades meeting a couple weeks ago, you know, everybody across the state and also across the Midwest and across the country in the building trades is trying to do more that they can to get people of color, to get vets, to get females into our ranks. And if a portion of our membership that we represent, females, are being attacked by the state, you know, how can we sit idly by and have that happen? You know, we've got to stand up for our membership and stand up for them. Also, another way that it looks like that it could be used against us is, if you remember Senate Bill 5, you know, we were able to beat that back, which, you know, in 2011, with right around 61% of the vote. So if this were to pass, then that means that beating back Senate Bill 5 would have only passed by a point and a half. And also all the money that we had to spend to beat that back, you know, how much money would that take now if another attack on organized labor came? And there's rumblings around the state house that this is just a precursor to look at a tax on prevailing wage, but also to see, you know, what the American prosperity can get some of these people in the House and in the Senate that have went along with this 60% constitutional amendment to see what they can get them to move on when it comes to doing away with prevailing wage and also making Ohio a right-to-work state. So obviously the folks here in Columbus and across the state of Ohio and organized labor, and particularly the building trades, are keeping a close eye on this. And I want to commend Matt Smith, the political director for the Ohio AFL-CIO, and Tim Berga for getting everybody together, and Melissa Cropper as well, and having these conversations together amongst all of us. And then we kind of dispatched and went out and, you know, hit some state house members and hit some state senators and their staffers and just basically talked about our concerns. Another issue that we heavily discussed, which is coming to light right now, which is another attack on organized labor, is Senate Bill 83 and House Bill 151, which the Columbus Building Trades came out this week in opposition to as well and signed on to, as well as the Ohio State Building Trades. And that would strip collective bargaining rights from teachers, staffers, aides, and folks that work at public universities, which is, again, kind of like a piecemeal approach at kind of diminishing the rights of workers here in the state. And we've came out adamantly opposed to that. And that was another thing that we talked to people in the State House and in the State Senate about, too, because obviously we would like everybody who works at these universities, and some of this work is very hard and very challenging, very difficult. We'd like for them to have the opportunity to join a union so that they can fairly represent themselves and collectively bargain for the wages and benefits that they deserve.
Dorsey, you know what bothers me about this, and I'm sure it bothers you. There's been a lot of people. I saw the crowd at the State House when they pushed for that August election. And you mentioned Senate Bill 83. There were a lot of people that tried to get their voices heard, and they were shut down. That scares me. That really scares me. That, like, nobody is listening to reasoning right now. And the very fact that they took away August elections because nobody showed up, and now they want to do this in August, which is right around the corner, very, very troublesome. And I know there's been a lot of editorial opinion on that, talking about what I just said here on the show. Is there a chance that this might be nixed? I think there's a court battle going on saying, wait a minute, we can't do this quickly. What are you hearing?
There's a court battle. It's kind of ironic because I talked to somebody from the local board of elections today, and obviously their concern is that he and his staff, would have to put on a special election in August, have to put on a general election in November, and then have to turn right around and prepare for the presidential and the primary election in March. So that's three very large elections less than a 5-month time, which is very costly. And I think the cost to have an August special election throughout the state is right around $25 million. So we're hopeful that the court is going to uphold that and not have the August special election. But I'm not feeling very positive, I guess. I guess we're always preparing for the worst case scenario. And, yeah. We're going to get out. We're going to raise money. We're going to get people the word out. We're going to get our members out. You know, I'm speaking to OCSEA Saturday morning, and I'm going to kind of give them my opinion on it and why they should get out and speak to their members as well. I've spoken to a couple different building trades councils. I've spoken to a couple of different building trades locals. And, you know, through every facet that we have to communicate with our members, you know, mail, social media, our website and everything, we're going to do that. But again, I am just fearful that this is a precursor to an attack on organized labor that may come down the road. And, you know, it's like I said a couple of weeks ago, my friends at Jobs Ohio, my friends at One Columbus, you know, bipartisan, both Democrats and Republicans, you know, we got a good thing going here in the state of Ohio. We got a good thing going in Columbus and Central Ohio. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of growth. There's a lot of stuff that's happening here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And why would we want to do anything to derail the train and knock it off the tracks? I just don't think that that's a good thing. We want to make Ohio as welcoming and inviting as we can. And I'm fearful that the Intels and the Hondas and the the Amazons and the Googles and the Facebooks and the Microsofts are going to have a hard time keeping talent here and attracting talent to Ohio to man a lot of these jobs and to man a lot of these places that we're building if we continue these rights, these attacks on democracy and these attacks on people and these attacks on women rights that obviously, if you look at polling, is not very popular here in the state of Ohio.
Boy, I'm glad you brought that up because these contracts, this whole deal to get Intel and these big companies, you mentioned a few there, Amazon and Google, none of this was going on when they were doing the bidding for these projects. And now they got to be looking at the legislature, scratching their head, wondering, wait a minute, what kind of state did we pick? And Dorsey, the bigger picture here, what has happened to the state of Ohio? I mean, you've been a labor leader for a long time, and there was some balance in the legislature. Now we have the supermajority. How did we get to this point?
So I think there's a couple answers to that. One, I was at dinner with a couple of friends the other day, and a friend of mine, admittedly a Democrat, but extremely moderate, somewhat fiscally conservative, somewhat socially liberal, but very moderate, and very kind of down the middle, said to me that he never thought in his life would he see Georgia become a bluer state than Ohio. I mean, if you think about that, we're closer to Mississippi than we are to Pennsylvania, politically wise. It's amazing how things have changed in the last 10 to 20 years. The root cause, and I know a lot of people, you know, blame it on a lot of different things, but I still believe that it's gerrymandering. And I said this a couple of weeks ago after the passing of Jerry Springer, the former mayor of Cincinnati, and you know, one of the, you know, I know his show and everything, but obviously one of the smartest political minds I'd ever had the chance to sit down, get to know, and talk to about politics. And I remember seeing an interview he did on national media in 1992 when he was talking about gerrymandering at the federal level and how it was going to be the downfall of our government and democracy. When you take somebody as far left as you can and you take somebody as far right as you can and you send those folks to D.C., and you expect them to come together in the middle to govern for all, it's just not going to happen. And I think that's what we see here in Ohio. I mean, looking back at the state house races last year, 99 races, how many were truly competitive? Maybe 6 or 7. All the other races were fought in the primaries, and the primary winners were pretty much going to go on, you know, to an uncontested victory because of the way that the districts are drawn. And I think that that's done on purpose, and I think it's done to keep political power and to keep one party in power. And, you know, when you have one party rule, no matter what side it's on, it's never good. It's never good government. It's never good government. And I think that's what we're seeing in Ohio.
Well, thanks for that perspective. I really appreciate that. You know, I got to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Forgot to mention the Twitter handle. That's BuildCentralOH. And there's a lot going on. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin one of our longtime regulars now, Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. All right, let's get a quick update on Intel. You got a progress report you can share with our listeners right now?
Yeah, so we, you know, had our monthly meeting at the end of May, met with Bechtel, the folks that are out there in charge of building the first two fabs, the first phase. And, you know, like we said, there's about $20 billion worth of construction. There's iron workers out there with more scheduled to come out to start bringing the steel out of the ground. There's cement finishers, there's laborers, there's operating engineers, there's Teamsters out there hauling the cement. They're in the process of building two batch plants right now to produce cement on site, where it looks like the goal is to pour about 460,000 square yards of cement and concrete. So everything is good. There's also underground going on. We have members of the UA, members of the IBEW out there getting underground ready, bringing utilities in and stuff. So everything seems to be on schedule. We're keeping up with manpower demands. You know, seems like everything's going great. We're also focusing on some of the other work in Columbus and Central Ohio. So should be a big announcement any day about who was awarded the airport expansion, which is going to be about a $2 billion airport expansion. It's going to add 37 gates and a couple more terminals. So, you know, the Columbus Airport has about 8 million travelers a year right now. They're looking in the next 5 years to be increasing to close to 13 million travelers. So obviously we got to expand and grow the airport to be able to keep up with that growth of everybody that's coming to Columbus and Central Ohio. But just trying to stay on top of it all, including the solar work, the infrastructure, the wastewater treatment plants and all that that we can do to increase infrastructure, make infrastructure better so we can still be a place where people want to come and they want to build, they want to grow, and they want to expand. So those are the things we're working on right now here locally.
If you don't mind, let's go back to Intel for a little bit. Refresh me on the amount. You mentioned the United Association. Refresh me on the amount of water. I know chips plants require a lot of water. How much water, and how are we doing getting the people into the UA to manage that, Dorsey?
Yeah, so we're, you know, we're doing what we can. We're doing outreach. We're doing recruitment. We're doing organizing. We're out doing events to folks as young as in the 7th and 8th grade to all the way, you know, getting ready to graduate from high school, and people maybe in their 30s and 40s who are looking for a second career. They're maybe underemployed or unemployed. So I think we're doing a great job so far meeting the manpower needs. We need to keep the foot on the pedal and step on the gas and keep doing what we're doing. But, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there about water and stuff. And everything that I've read and everything that I've understood and every presentation that I've been in is that the water that's used by Intel out there, they're going to put back, and it's going to be clean water and stuff, and it's going to be replaced. And obviously that's going to be with the help of the wastewater treatment plants and the work that the UA and everybody's doing. But I'm hearing anywhere from 2 to 5 million gallons a day once they're at peak production and once the plant opens. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
2 to 5 million gallons a day. A day. That's a lot. That's a lot. I know you're trying to make as many relationships as possible with the community, with the schools, and another organization, Helmets to Hard Hats. Great organization. Can you talk to me about how well we're doing in that arena, Dorsey?
Yeah, so I got to give a shout-out to Mark Douglas, the president of the State Building Trades. He's been brought on full-time on staff to help with project labor agreements, to help with recruitment, to help with workforce development. He's doing a great job in his first 5 months. He had a meeting of training directors, agents, and managers, the state offices. A couple of weeks ago, he brought in Marty Helms from NAV2, who oversees Helmets to Hard Hats, and we talked about some of the things that we could be doing to recruiting on the data, on the bases that are here, and also virtually recruiting on bases around the world and reaching out to folks that are getting ready to leave their service with the United States military. And Marty had some great ideas. One of them, which we've never really incorporated, is, you know, just because somebody's not from Columbus doesn't mean that you don't need to be reaching out to those folks in those bases, because we're going to see this with everything going on here. If there's folks around the country that are living in markets that are a little soft, they're going to want to relocate, and they're going to want to work here, and they're going to want to raise a family and buy a house. And I think we're going to see that with folks who are concluding their military service too. When they're looking at where they want to go to, I think Columbus and Central Ohio is going to be a tremendous destination. So we're going to work on building and adding that database and stuffing it with, like I said, with vets from Helmets to Hard Hats, along with people of color and females and anybody that's interested in the trade. So that way, when an opportunity becomes available, we have that to where we can reach out to them and get them on some of these job sites and get them on this direct path to the middle class. So we're really excited about everything that's going on in our partnership with Helmets to Hard Hats and our ability to be able to give back to the folks who defended our country and gave their time to this country.
Let's give Helmets to Hard Hats a little plug here. Go to the website, helmetstohardhats.org. That's a national website. You can find a lot of good information posted there, helmetstohardhats.org. All right, one more issue here. We know housing costs have gone up dramatically. Well, everything's gone up. We've seen some incredible inflation over the years. But we need what's called sustainable housing. Can you fill us in? I understand there was a roundtable discussion on this recently. Can you fill us in on what was discussed?
Yeah, so former Congressman Pat Tiberi, I've known since his time in Congress and before, put together a roundtable at the Huntington Bank headquarters here in Columbus, and he brought folks from One Columbus, folks from Jobs, Ohio, the building trades, the home builders, elected staffers throughout the community and everything. And we just basically sat around, kind of, you know, looked at the housing crisis that we're having here in Columbus and Central Ohio. And it's new homes, it's existing homes, it's condominiums, it's apartments, it's everything. And what can we do to increase sustainable and affordable housing here in Columbus and Central Ohio? So that way, when folks come here to go to work or people move here or relocate here, they have a place to where they can raise their family and they can take care of themselves and they can really live and grow and prosper. And, you know, everybody has a lot of solutions. My solution was very simple. We need to build more dwellings, and we need to speed up the permit process, and we need to get folks that are interested, either in middle schools or high schools that are looking to try construction, we need to get them involved as well. So we had some good ideas and stuff. There was a lot of stats, figures, facts that they gave that were very alarming. You know, people 22 to 35, Columbus is the fastest growing city in the Midwest. For folks that age, we're in the top 10 of all cities in the country. We're the only city that's east of the Mississippi and not on the West Coast. So Columbus is a huge draw for young people. The average age of a first-time home buyer now is 35 years old. The average age of a second-time home buyer is 53. So if you go back and you think, you know, usually you buy your first house because it's something that you can afford. You pay on it, you build equity. Hopefully you move up a little bit in your career where you're making more money. You can afford something that you really, your dream home, and that's your second home. And when I heard the fact that a second-time home buyer, you know, the average age in Columbus, Central Ohio is now 53 years old, that was incredibly alarming. So I think we got a lot of work to do here. I think everybody involved has to work to get this issue solved and get this done. If not, we're gonna have some problems when it comes to attracting talent here to Columbus and Central Ohio, but also keeping talent.
Dorsey, to your point, I tell you, I'm hearing so many good things coming out of Central Ohio. And I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. You got a lot of young people. You got the Ohio State University there. You got the state government there, but a lot of good things. Great construction. Obviously, the politics are working there, which some people should take a cue from in other parts of the country. But keep doing what you're doing, brother. I mean, it is. I think the growth capital of the Midwest right now. Wouldn't you go as far as saying something like that?
I would agree. And like I said, it's not just Columbus and Franklin County. It's all of Central Ohio, and it's the market, it's the region, it's the abutting and surrounding counties, and it's just the opportunities, you know, that are presented to get folks and their families to get into that middle class. And I think that's why it's so important. I agree with you 100%.
All right. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Twitter handle BuildCentralOH, and I mean that, BuildCentralOH, ColumbusConstruction.org. You take care, stay safe, keep doing what you're doing. We'll check in with you next month, okay, brother?
Sounds good. Kick off to the summer. The temperatures are going to be rising, so be safe, and look forward to talking to you again in a month. Thanks, Flash.